shine, little Uber, liver, liver, lead us.
Good evening and welcome to As the Worm Turns. You're tuned in to KVNF's live call-in gardening show. I'm your host, Jill Spears, and I'm here with my favorite gardener, Lance Swigert. Good evening.
Good evening.
And we've got a special guest in the house tonight, Frank Stoneker from Osito Orchards up on Rogers Mesa. Great to have you here, Frank.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, you've been doing some great stuff. We had Frank on the show a couple
Two years ago.
And we're going to find out what's going on up there at Osito Orchards. And then also Frank's involved with the CSU Ag Experiment Station reopening and exciting stuff there. So I want to give everybody the phone numbers because we've got some good people here to ask questions and see what's going on. 527-486-8166-KVNF now. And you can send an email, if you prefer, to worm@kvnf.org. Okay, up there on Rogers Mesa, Osito Orchards, growing organic fruit. About 5 years now you've been up there, right, Frank?
Yes, Beth and I moved out here from the Front Range about 5 years ago and took over what has been an orchard ground for over 100 years, and we've been learning a lot in the last 5 years.
Working on dialing it in.
Trying to dial it in.
Getting your system going.
Mm-hmm. We've had a lot of help from good neighbors and a lot of resources here in the community, so I've enjoyed that a lot.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And you have some experience in agriculture. Tell us a little bit about your background there.
that's a long, confusing road. But, yeah, started farming in 1980 when I graduated from CSU in agronomy and thought I wanted to be an organic farmer then.
Wow.
And wandered around, did some work in entomology and greenhouse work, and eventually back to CSU where we worked in organic vegetable systems when I was on the faculty at in the horticulture department.
That's excellent. I mean, 1980, thinking about organic farming. I mean, when you want to do the math now, that was quite a while ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was a really long time
yeah.
ago.
So your roots are deep in that kind of thinking.
Yeah, we were a little bit early in the organic end, and we were really interested in feeding Fort Collins with locally grown produce. So that theme lingers. Uh-huh.
Right. This is a long time theme, and I think that's what we're going to get into a little bit at the Ag Experiment Station and what can happen up there with community.
It's great to see Rogers Mesa reopening after quite a long hiatus, and really looking forward to making it the resource that it was years ago. I think that it has a long history of engagement with the community, and looking forward to bringing it back into that circle.
Yeah, great. We're going to talk about that in just a second. 527-486-8166-KVNF now. So you're a busy guy up there. You've got an orchard going and now this new project. What are you growing up at that orchard? What have you been working on these last 5 years?
So Osito Orchard has organic peaches and apples and sweet cherries, and we do some table grapes as well.
Table grapes. Wow. So, yeah, that's a nice crop up there, huh?
Mm-hmm.
This is right up near your property. Right,
yeah, I'm another couple miles up.
Okay.
Come, you know.
It's a sweet mesa up there, yeah. Some good soil.
Oh, good soil. Mm-hmm. But I was curious on what you're pruning right now.
Okay.
Right, yeah, we're right now at Osito Orchard. We're finishing up our apple pruning and got two good friends, Bernardo and Porfirio, working on that. They're real expert pruners, and they'll probably wrap that up in another week. And then we'll move into some cherries, I think.
Uh-huh.
We're going to be trying some really radical pruning on some of our established cherry trees. I'm excited about seeing if we can't turn a standard tree into what they call a KGB tree, which is chopped down and resprouted. So that the birds have a harder time hanging on to the branches and I have an easier time reaching the cherries.
Oh, interesting. So what does radical mean? Shaping it differently, or how does it turn into a KGB tree?
So KGB is Kim Green Bush, and that's an Australian pomologist that came up with this system. And basically, it's a shrub instead of a tree. So to make a cherry tree into a shrub, you basically chop it off at the knees and hope that it resprouts into a gazillion little water sprouts. And those eventually become fruiting wood during the next 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It take about 2 or 3 years, yeah.
So that sounds kind of radical to me.
It is.
It's chopping it off at the knees.
And it's kind of a sad thing. They're beautiful trees, but they're also really tall, and getting up 20 feet on a ladder is not something I enjoy, and I don't think most pickers do. So hopefully, if we can keep the frost away, then we should have some cherries that are within reach.
Okay, well, that's interesting. I'm kind of excited to see how that's going to work. That's got to be nerve-wracking.
I'm not going to chop them all down at once.
But. Right. You also had an experiment going up there with the high tunnels that you built for the cherry trees. Can you talk about that? And has that led you to this KGB philosophy?
Well, there's the UFO and there's the KGB and there's all these different systems.
I like it.
We're, I guess going on 3 years now ago, we put up about an acre of high tunnels over some high-density plantings of sweet cherries, hoping that we could cover them in the spring and avoid the likelihood of freezing on our cherries. And the first year, we avoided the frost pretty well, but the bees were unhappy under the covers. And the second year, we found some bumblebees that would tolerate the plastic covers, and also discovered that the heat generated from a wind machine that just happened to be standing up in the middle of the high tunnel would give us about 10 degrees of protection. So I had the pollination dialed and had found out that we had enough heat in the tunnel to avoid a freeze. And then on the longest, coldest night of last spring, when the wind machine was heating everything up and everything was toasty and the flowers were thick and the bees were happy, the wind machine quit. I broke down in the middle of the coldest night.
Oh.
And so we froze out anyway.
Oh.
So this year, we're going to have triplicate duplicity or triplicity and keep some warmth in those tunnels.
Mm, that's farming, huh? That is tough. Okay,
so you had to import bumblebees for pollinators for that?
So the bumblebees that are commercially available are shipped out of, these came out of Michigan.
Oh, okay.
And it's a Bombus impatiens, which it may be a Bombus occidentalis that they rear there. But anyway, the occidentalis is a local bee and the impatiens is not. And so the queens are disallowed exit from the hives. They have a little contraption that keeps the queens in the hives so they can't leave. But they lasted through the pollination season and then sort of burned out. So
okay,
we had a lot of native pollinators show up there too. So
yeah,
good deal. All right, so really making those cherry trees happen and doing a lot of different things. I like that. I mean, that's kind of what your whole background is experimentation and seeing how things work. It just leads you right into this ag experiment station.
Well, you know, years ago I discovered that I did things very differently than other people in my neighborhood. And it seems that every place I go, when you meet new farmers, people that don't come from a history of farming, they try the most ridiculous things over and over again. And some of them are brilliant, and some of them are colossal failures. But those few brilliant moments, I think, really lead to the advancement and movement of a system, and that's the history of organic agriculture, I think, a lot of trials and errors.
Right.
And so we're back at the trial stage.
Yeah, and that's what we're always talking about, is just get out there and do it and try it and see
what
happens. Right.
Yeah, somebody, I was having a garden tour years ago, and somebody goes, well, where'd you learn all this? And I looked, and he goes, you didn't do this trial and error. And I says, yeah, that's exactly what I did. It's all trial and error. And now I know what works for me.
Right.
You know, and I still do different things.
Okay, 527-486-8186 KVNF now. So the CSU Ag Experiment Station, a lot of us call it the Extension Office, but it's really the Ag Experiment Station, closed several years ago.
That's right.
And how is it that it came about to reopen?
Well, backing up a bit, sadly, back in the mid-2000s, CSU went through a real financial disaster, and they had to shut down a bunch of stations. So the station at Mountain Meadows station over at Gunnison was closed down, and the station outside of Durango was closed, and Rogers Mesa was closed and put up for sale in 2011. And I think it's fair to say that the community was really disappointed to see it closed. It had been a widely used and enjoyed resource. So that noisy bunch of activists pestered and presented proposals to CSU to rejuvenate it. None of those really took off. But Millie Hamner, our state representative, took it to the legislature and was able to come up with a sizable fund of $875,000 that was directed towards Ag Experiment Station on the Western Slope.
Right on.
So that was the foundation for a leverage for CSU to put about $10.5 million into Ag Experiment Station on the Western Slope as well as over in Rocky Ford.
Awesome.
Wow.
So we're getting a piece of that pie, and it's really great. We're rebuilding facilities, and we'll be replanting. Right now, we're doing a lot of tearing down before we rebuild. But
just getting that whole facility back in shape and ready for the community.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. When do you expect that to happen? When do you expect to open and be ready for folks to come in? And
well, hopefully. Historically, on Thursdays, there was this brown bag thing that went on at the research center, and growers would show up on Thursdays for lunch with their lunch, and they'd talk shop. And so hopefully as soon as the office building is available, and that may be as early as the end of February, we can reinvigorate the brown bag bunch and get some discussion going. And then the facility itself, the agricultural fields, the research fields, will be doing some real aggressive planting this spring. So if we have some water, everybody can do your dances out there, please, because we really need some moisture.
We need it.
What kind of plantings?
So historically, the station was really focused on tree fruit research, and we want to start that again. So we're planning on putting in peach and apple plantings this year, some table grape trials as well. And there's a lot of interest in the area, and the area is very suited for organic seed production. So we'd like to be putting in some organic seed trials. Very importantly, a lot of our work is going to be focusing on climate change mitigation and adaptation. So learning how we can deal with this changing climate in our
super
production.
Important. I mean, we're experiencing it right now, and every year it seems like the season gets a longer or shorter, whichever way you want to look at it. And we all dance around it, so why not talk about it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it should be at the top of every research station docket. And unfortunately, it's not a openly addressed issue.
Well, it will be now. And I know that people at Brown Bag Lunch are going to be talking about it because it's affecting us all. So glad to hear that there's going to be a focus of climate change up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, 527-4868, 1-866 KVNF now. We've got Lance in the house and Frank Stoniker from Osito Orchards up on Rogers Mesa. And Frank is also involved in the reopening of the CSU Ag Experiment Station up on Rogers Mesa, which is a great asset to the community. What do you see happening? We got the brown bag lunch happening where people can just come in and talk shop. But really, what kind of resource are you to the community? New farmers, old farmers, all in all kinds of projects. Tell us about that.
Well, it's a really, really long shopping list of what we hope to do and participate in. And I think as important as anything, we want to let the community know that this is a facility that's going to be focusing on applied research that will benefit them and that will benefit the producers in this part of the country. And that is not just established growers, but also a training facility, someplace where young growers can get started and try something out. We'd really like to use the facility as an incubator for any number of possibilities. Recently, a young couple here in the Hotchkiss area used the facility to get their food distribution hub started, and they're very successful at it a year or two later.
And the right, Farm Runners?
Farm Runners, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Matt and Emma.
And Katie. And right now we've got a young couple using the greenhouse space, and they're growing some greens, some microgreens, and trying to get a business model developed mm-hmm. and a system worked out where they can build that out. And they'll soon outgrow our small facility, but they'll have their feet on the ground, hopefully.
Yeah.
Right. So a great place to kind of dig in and see what's going to work for you and springboard.
That's right.
Springboard into your own deal. You also mentioned that you have will have a kitchen up there and some coolers and things. And
well, there is a lab space there.
That was okay.
Used for a soils lab and a number of other uses earlier. And that lab's been pretty much stripped out and redistributed to other facilities around the state. So we have an empty slate there. And one of the ideas that we have tossed around is developing a test kitchen where people could come in and test recipes or test processing for added value of their food products. And that's a possibility. So bring your ideas and we'll certainly consider them and see if we can't put that space into some use that's appropriate for the community.
Yeah, and that's what you're really looking for, is the community to kind of drive how that operates. Is that correct? To bring those ideas and really make that whole project work?
That's a big part of it. And as much as anything, we'd like to be able to facilitate things.
Right.
We certainly have to have our hands on the reins at some point and sort of direct things that are appropriate for the big picture here. But I think
sure.
a lot of small good ideas can make that big picture very, very productive.
Yeah. I'm curious, you know, if it's going to be organic, how are you going to test along with these plantings, soil fertility, and different, you know, cover crops, manures, compost, that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So this will be a really nice opportunity to look at that transition of a piece of land that historically has been used conventionally.
Mm-hmm.
And through different soil management techniques and processes, we can see how that soil evolves. The head of the Ag Experiment Station, Gene Kelly, over on campus, is a soil ecologist, a pedologist, and he's very interested in the evolution of soil. So
mm-hmm.
we have some really great resources at hand that we can use to not only measure and observe what happens in the soil, but actually try a lot of different things to see what's mm-hmm. happening, why it's happening, and how it's going to impact our farming efforts.
Yeah. Be interesting to see, because Ron's talking about the cover crops, perennial cover cropping, and just planting the seeds, mowing it down, planting, and just leaving that cover crop, not tilling it in.
Right. So in our organic orchards, a lot of the fertility is simply recycling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing the volume of materials that get pruned out of trees and laid down on the ground and just with the good work of earthworms, in a year disappear from the surface, and mm-hmm. they're definitely part of our soil. So we're really interested in understanding the biochemistry and some of the deeper science involved in organic practices.
Well, you had a flail mower, I remember the last time. How's that been working?
That flail mower is still with us and still threatens everybody who uses it.
What is that?
It's a mower to chop up the prunings
okay.
instead of
mm-hmm.
take them off and burn them.
Right.
It's exactly what it's called. It's a flail mower. It's a big beast that just tears it, beats
Rips
up everything
up.
Into
yeah.
small pieces. And sometimes a piece of wood or a log escapes its flails and goes flying past your head.
Yeah. Hard hat glasses time. And hard hat, yeah, for sure.
But it's a really effective tool at reincorporating organic matter into the system.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love talking about soil, and we're going to continue that. But we've got Bob in Crawford on the line with a question. Good evening, Bob.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you, Bob?
Doing good. First of all, I really want to thank Jill and Lance and the mighty Lulu for this great show that you guys have done.
Thank you, Bob.
It's a wonderful asset for the community. And I'd just like to have Frank let us know if there's going to be any hemp research done at the center. And I'm going to go ahead and hang up and listen to the answer.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate the question and call.
Thanks, you guys.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Thanks, Bob. That question comes up a lot, and there's a lot of research. There's a lot of interest in research in hemp and marijuana in Colorado, and we're trying not to duplicate efforts around the state that are being done elsewhere, and there's quite a bit of hemp research being done at the Fort Collins RDEC facility. And I think there is some going on at Fruita as well. So at this point, we're probably not going to be working on hemp, but that's just the immediate position. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that has to do with what it takes to tool up to do different types of research. And if we're going to go into forages and livestock and hemp and all these different areas, it's incredibly expensive to have tools to do all those things at all the different research stations. So I'm a veg guy and more of a pomologist interest, and that's the tool that we have to work with here.
Right.
And so that's probably where we're going to push most of our effort.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, another thought was just grain growing.
Yeah, I mean, this valley is really diverse. There's all sorts of different farmers and all sorts of different opportunities. Grains certainly are well-suited to the area. They also require combines and special equipment and storage facilities that we don't have there at this point.
At this point, okay.
And there's a lot of grain search research done at other stations that CSU has that information.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So your focus is mostly on the fruit, climate change, organic seed production, those.
Hopefully some more work in vegetables. And Rick Zimmerman did a lot of work in that previously. And, of course, I'm a veg guy myself, and so that's hard to pull out of my blood.
Right.
So I'm sure we'll be working in that as well.
And you're so veggie, you even grew a patch of squash up at your orchard, right?
Couldn't help myself. Yeah. We had some open ground this year, so I just had to plant some vegetables on it.
Lulu would be proud to see your squash patch. All right, 527-486-8 1-866 KVNF now. Let's talk a little bit about that soil production. We had a question from a listener who emailed in, and he sets the schedule to listen every Tuesday, and we appreciate that, Thomas. And he has a question about your soil, Lance, and when you bought your property up there, did you have to remove certain plants, sagebrush, and what was the process you used to improve that soil to the yield that you get today?
Yeah. First of all, I was lucky enough that all the sagebrush and juniper and pinyon had been cleared, and most of it had been rocked. It wasn't an irrigated field. It was just wastewater from other fields coming onto that property. And so that part was done. And what I started doing was just cover crops and manure and compost. And I never stopped. I didn't even think. This is something I wrote down here. Lots of people think the soil is horrible and hard to work with. That never entered my mind.
You didn't go in with that preconceived.
No, this is really good soil.
Challenge.
And you just need to know how to work it. And there's a perfect time in spring. And every year's different time frame where the soil is very easy to work. Mm. It's the freezing and thawing. And then there's a point where it just gets hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I just stayed on it and,
Found that sweet spot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I just don't stop.
Did you do cover crops, manure, compost for a couple of years before you planted, or
no,
what was the
directly,
timeline?
I just started.
Just started going for it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just and added,
building beds and
yeah. Just started in the garden. Went from one side to the, what I would say to anybody is put up a game fence. No, if you're out in the field, you know, even in town, there's deer mm-hmm. in town. That was the third year I realized I need to put up a fence. So I would put up the fence first. It saves, well, I mean, 8 porcupines chewing down things, mm-hmm. deer, elk, you know, everybody else, guinea hens, the neighbor's guinea hens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right.
So put up the game fence. And
so the soil wasn't an issue. You just started to enhance it. It
yeah.
was the critters.
The critters were more of a problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's what we talk about all the time is your mm-hmm. cover crops, manure, composting, and
yeah.
just that.
You know, the problem
cycle.
With a pasture, if you got a pasture, an old orchard that was with conventional, is the soil life is burned out with all those chemicals being used. And so you might have to inoculate the soil and go to a place that has not live compost, not compost that's been pasteurized. You could get live compost and or somebody that has really good soil
okay.
and that's willing to let you have some.
Right, so your property hadn't been farmed before, and
no.
so you just had some good soil
yeah.
ready to go.
Yeah. And there's still rocks there. I hit them from time to time.
Oh, sure. All right.
It's amazing how fast microorganisms and worms can rejuvenate a really abused soil if you
mm-hmm.
give them some organic matter to work
yeah.
with.
Right, right.
I mean, I mention this every year in the fall. Go out there, put as compost or leaves, all organic matter, put a couple inches of manure on it and till it in or hand turn it in. And it doesn't have to be perfect. And that's you'll have beautiful soil in the spring.
Yeah,
it's really,
amazing.
In 1 year, 1 winter, I should say, it will
that's
work.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
It's almost like you are what you eat, same
yeah.
thing in the soil
yeah.
kind of thing. I just
but
love
you,
that.
But you got to do it every year.
Keep on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't do it 1 year and think you're okay. You know. It's every
keep
year.
Feeding it.
Yeah.
It's a little community under there.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
All right. 527-4868-1866, KVNF now. Frank, you have a pretty good advisory board that you work with to get this whole extension or experiment station going again.
Yeah, I'm so lucky. We've got so much depth in this area up and down the valley, and it was really hard to pick out a few people and ask them to please come and board and everybody jumped in, really happy to help.
Sure.
Don LaRoe, up here from Zephyros Farm, who's on the Organic Farming Research Foundation board, great resource, vegetable and flower grower with Daphne. And then David Harold, who's a big sweet corn grower down in Olathe area, is also doing a lot of work in organics with his cropping systems and very interested in soil health and appropriate rotations for his crops. And then Laura Parker, who's a really top-notch seed producer out of Montrose. She was the executive director of OSGATA, the Organic Seed Growers Association.
Oh, wow.
And
great.
Lucky she's in the area. So a lot of deep seed knowledge there. And then Larry Traubel, who owns CropWorks up in Cedar Edge, is just a wealth of information about pest management and soil fertility and orchard systems, as is Steve Ela, also on the board. He's our iconic fruit grower in the area. Everybody knows Steve, and he's also on the Organic Standards Board for the National Organic Program. So we've got some nice inroads
wow.
there.
Yeah, fabulous.
And then Lorian Univer is an economist out of Grand Junction that was really involved in some of the economic analysis of Delta County economic development programs. So we've got a really nice, rounded, and energetic and generous group of advisors.
Yeah, what a great team to have behind this. And people can access this information and this wealth of knowledge, which is so exciting, right in time for planting in the new season.
That's right.
Yeah, we'll super.
See what season brings.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the big things you're going to be doing up there is some organic seed production. Can you tell us a little bit about that program and how that's going to work?
So one of the interests in that in that direction is the history of the area. Not only are we great fruit producers up here, but historically there was quite a bit of seed production done in this area. And the organic seed growers have a real opportunity to step out of what's a more and more centralized seed production system nationally, internationally, and really focus on regionally adapted varieties like Lance has done. And so we have a great climate for it, and I think it's more a question of determining which species might be really well suited for a commercial scale production here so that we can do a good job, get seed out to Colorado producers, regional producers, the whole Rocky Mountain area, I think would really benefit from that. So looking forward to pestering Lance a lot about his, not only the varieties that he's got stashed away in his barn, but also some of his deep seed knowledge.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just amazing.
One more thing.
Yeah, one more thing. But amazing that adaptability factor, which is amazing. And I think that's part of your success, Lance. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you got your own seeds, they germinate in the soils, they grow differently here. And I was talking earlier that all my carrots seem to be turning into the same thing, even though I got like 5-7 varieties of carrots. Onions, you know, you find out which ones work here. And I'm working with 6 varieties of onions, all for storage.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And they slowly and surely. I direct seed them, so I'm not getting huge onions. But I ate onions last year from the year before into July. Wow. Just storage. And not even coolers. I'm just, you know, shifting around, keeping
them.
Is
that in your pit or your...
No, onions can't go in the pit.
Oh, okay.
No, where they have to stay dry.
Dry storage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they're in that garden room of mine. Right now the windows are open. I better remember to go home and close those windows. But, and chilly. Yeah, so I'm working with those. I have 3 different cabbages that I've grown out for seed. Hmm. And that's quite the process to do that. Well, mainly you have to store the cabbage.
Right, right.
Roots and all.
You replant those or do you leave them out?
I replant them.
I see.
And I store them in buckets of sand.
Uh-huh.
And every 2 weeks I actually water them.
In the sand? Dampen the sand?
Uh-huh. Dampen the sand. Mm-hmm. But they're in the dark, no light, because I don't want them to grow. And then in the springtime you plant them out. And it's a really strange thing. You actually have to split the cabbage head open. You actually cut it in a cross pattern.
Oh, right.
Because the center can't push through all those leaves.
Yeah.
The seed. And so, and it might take a couple times. Some you get them just right, and some, that's not quite. You can see it's trying to force its way, and I'll cut it several times.
Mm-hmm.
And they look just like broccoli or cauliflower or, you know, kale, that flower.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, this is going to be exciting because we've been talking about your seed production for many years now, and Sarah Pope from the library has put that whole seed program in, and now we're going to have the CSU experiment station working on organic seed production, and it's just exciting.
It's really nice full circle.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the Hotchkiss, look in the shopper tomorrow, they have a schedule of the days they're going to do seed sorting and packing at the library.
Oh, okay.
And I think next Tuesday is Hotchkiss. I think the 30th. And there's actually a schedule in the shopper. It was in there last week.
Okay.
And they had Delta and they had Cedar Ridge, those libraries listed in there.
All right. We'll look that up and give you that information next week. But you might want to check in case something's coming up before next Tuesday with the library programs. Mm-hmm.
Put those pretty seed catalogs down for a little bit.
Yeah. We've got our own pretty seed thing going right here. Yeah. Super. Okay, so Frank Stoniker from Orcito Orchards up on Rogers Mesa joined us tonight with Lance. And Frank's going to be helping with and kind of heading up that CSU Ag Experiment Station to get reopened with his great expert advisory board. And lots of stuff going up there. I mean, climate change and adaptation, soil fertility, organic research, seed production.
Fun.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
great community resource. And thanks so much for being here, Frank.
Thanks so much and for inviting me.
Yeah, love to have you back and give us a report on how things go and what's exciting and happening up there.
Well, as soon as we get some field days going and brown bag sessions rolling, we'll put a notice out, hopefully over KVNF, and let the community know.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Frank. Thanks, Lance. And we'll see you again next Tuesday at 6:30, and it's One Woman's Perspective coming up next on KVNF. Thanks for listening to As the Worm Turns.
Faster. I don't know who you took a shine to or who you're about to make a sign to. I got a gal that I love so. Low, little low, and low.